Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. If you've never listened to my show before, you can head over to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I've actually been doing the show since 2011, and it features all kinds of guests sharing inspiring stories or different activities you can do to lift you up when you're going through something. And I was inspired to start this in 2010, and here we are. So I was fortunate to go meet the CEO of the Pacific Marine Mammal Center, Glenn Gray, and I also spoke with Dr. Alyssa Deming, Vice President of Conservation Medicine and Science, a couple weeks ago. And right now the center is not open because they're undergoing an incredible renovation with the help of Bob Barker, the late Bob Barker, and he's going to share the whole story of how Bob Barker got involved with the center and what's been going on. So today's show's a little different. You might hear some strange noises during the show, and they're not actually strange at all. There are some seals and sea lions in the background, and there's a lot of young ones, so they're making a lot of noise. I recorded the show remotely, edited it, so you're going to hear the background sounds of while I was having these great conversations. It's not like we could put the seals on mute. So if you heard that, that's what it is. On the show blog is all the information about the center. It'll be reopening in November, which is really exciting. They're going to have a grand opening, and they have these incredible renovations going on. This is a purpose-driven rehab center for marine mammals. If you're not familiar with it, you should learn more about it. It's a great visit. I actually started visiting this, I think, in early 2001, maybe. We used to take our kids there. It's a really, really interesting center, but it's going to be huge after the renovation. You know what? There's no better way to get out of a funk than to put yourself in a situation where you're helping others. And in this case, there are a lot of volunteers getting involved to help the environment because these beautiful sea creatures really need the help. I'm not going to give it away, but there's a lot of things that are going on with the sea lions and with the seals, and you'll hear it in the segment. The rehab center opened in 71, actually. So it began 53 years ago with a single injured harbor seal. And the center is now recognized as a premier marine mammal rescue research and rehab center. It welcomes around 50,000 visitors annually from around the world. And they learn about current rescued animals and observe conservation efforts and things like that. There are over 36,000 students from local schools that get to learn how to be better ocean stewards, and their distance learning programs educate students across the country. You can learn about the team of volunteers. They have hundreds of volunteers, and they're always looking for more. They are donating their time and their energy to help, you know, rehab these amazing animals. So without further ado, we're going to listen to the segment I did, and I hope you enjoy. If you ever have any questions or you want to submit a guest idea, you can shoot me an email to Janine, Janeane at KUCI.org. And if you're not familiar with KUCI, you can visit our website at KUCI.org, and you can follow our socials at KUCI FM.
This is Glenn Gray with Pacific Marine Mammal Center, and I'm the CEO.
Tell me about the history of the center. Wasn't it originally called Friends of the Sea Lions?
Yeah, we have a very interesting, colorful history. We're about 53 years old right now. It started with a young girl seeing a seal stranded on the beach, not doing well, didn't know exactly what the problem was. She went to a lifeguard. His name was Jim Stafford. Jim took that seal home and put it in a baby pool and rehabilitated it back to good health. And then that caught on. More people were coming to Jim, say, hey, can you help this one? And can you help that one? And then Jim's buddy, John Cunningham, also a Laguna Beach lifeguard, the two of them combined, and they created what was originally our legal name, Friends of the Sea Lions. They were given a state charter, first state charter in the state of California to deal with marine mammals in this way, in 1971. They obviously grew outside of their backyard. And the center that we're in or reconstructing right now belongs to the city of Laguna Beach. Used to be the horse barn back in the days when they patrolled by horse. Mm-hmm. And we've reconverted it into our hospital.
And didn't it start with about 100 sea lions, and then it became so big that...
Oh, just because... Yeah, that was how... What precipitated them moving. I mean, you can imagine having a bunch of baby pools in your backyard. You know, neighbors might complain just a little bit. You really can't do too much more than, really a handful before you need a facility of this size. And our patient population, it fluctuates from year to year. There are events, we call them UME, unusual mortality events. Hopefully they don't come very often, but every once in a while we get one, and that's when our population just spikes.
Have environmental issues caused a spike? I know there was, what is it, osmoic acid?
Domoic acid. I think you're referring to the bloom that happened last summer, right around 4th of July. Yeah, that was an unfortunate event where it was a combination of primarily rising water temperatures in the ocean. But there also needs to be some nutrients, and I'm not a scientist, but it's theorized that it could have been runoff or it could have been fertilizer. But anyway, that combination increased the population of the algae. And if you think about the food chain, the smaller fish eat the algae, the bigger fish eat the smaller fish, the seals eat the fish. So by the time the seals are eating, there's a fair amount of toxic algae in their food source. And that's what happened last summer. It affected the marine mammals of all ages, not just pups. We had adults. In fact, that's why we ended up having a maternity ward last summer, because we brought in three females who happened to be pregnant. Because of the toxicity, they needed to give birth, so we induced birth here in our center. It was really cute to see the pups, though.
Are there pictures of this online somewhere?
Oh, yeah, we have them on our website. And in fact, we took our pups down to SeaWorld because they also had pups. And it's good for the pups to all kind of grow up together. We kind of refer to it as the pup posse. Mm-hmm. So that's a more natural setting for them to play amongst their own pups. Now, we're going to take all those. We're collaborating with SeaWorld to take them all out to their real home out in the Channel Islands, hopefully in June.
That's amazing. Was there ever a situation where you thought, I don't think this probably happens all the time, this pup is going to make it, and then they pull through miraculously and they're just so strong?
Oh, yes. They surprise us all the times in terms of their strength. We have some that have come in that, we just think, well, we're going to do everything we can, but we're probably going to have to euthanize this patient. And they just have a will, Our doctors are extraordinarily good. They deliver a level of medicine that you would be surprised to find at any veterinary clinic. We have PhDs on staff here. This is the most unusual veterinary facility I've ever seen.
How long have you been here?
Well, I've been a CEO for almost 2 years. I was on the board for 5. My wife was actually on the board for 6 years prior to that. So I've been around for about 13 years. But the last two have been really the most rewarding part. I tried to retire. That didn't work so well. So I call this my second act, and it's so much better than the first act.
What can we look forward to in the expansion, and when will you be opening tentatively?
Oh, our expansion. We're excited about that. At the pace we're going, which is on schedule, we should be reopened by the end of the year. And the entire pool system has been removed and will be replaced. So there'll be 10 new state-of-the-art pools connected to, even more important, a water reclamation facility. We go through a lot of water. And we have to dump these pools numerous times during the day. So with the new water reclamation facility, we're going to recycle upwards of 90% of our water, which is millions of gallons of water. We're the second largest water user in the city of Laguna Beach, second only to the city. And you imagine they have football fields and parks and so forth. So we're going to recycle 90% of that. The other thing that's exciting about the expansion is our education center, which will double in size. We contact upwards of 40,000 children a year through our education programs. Some of that's online, obviously some of it's in person. We're really looking forward to doubling our in-person capacity.
And I know there's going to be webcams, right? Because I went to your website.
Yeah, there'll be live webcams so that people can zoom in and see our patients. And typically we put those on the pools that I call them almost the pre-release pools. So that will focus on our patients that are getting ready to go home. And that's fun to watch because they're much more active. And, for example, when we feed them, we don't hand feed them. We put fish in the water for them, but they have to compete because they're going to go back out to the ocean in just, you know, a few days, maybe a week's time. So it's really fun to see them competing.
Is there a seal right now, a specific type of seal that stands out to you as having a quirky personality? Or is there one recently rescued that you're aware of that was weak and now they're just like rebounding with energy?
Well, I'd like to tell you about Empire, who we just sent home 2 days ago. Empire was found in construction equipment. And it just so happens that Empire is the construction company that is doing our major remodel. So we get an opportunity to name each animal. Well, the rescue team does. So they thought it would be cute, since we found him in a bulldozer, to name him Empire. And he had quite a personality. And such that Empire bonded with another seal that was here. And at the release, which was just the other day, they did not want to go without the other. So their personalities are really cute and unique, and it's really kind of special when we see them bonding with each other, which we'd rather they do. We don't want them bonding with us, because then they become too accustomed to humans. And if they come back on shore and they see humans, they go, oh, humans, you know, that's where I got food. So we don't want to do that, but we think it's great when they bond with each other.
How did you come up with the name? Who names these seals?
That's a privilege that we give to the rescue team. The way the seals are named is interesting, because we allow the rescue team, there's anywhere from 2 to 4 people that are out actually rescuing the animal, and they get to name it. Now, we can't repeat the name every 10 years, I think, is the standard. But you can also tell what's on the minds of the rescue team. Maybe they're hungry, because we had bagel and we had pumpkin. Or they might be into a country western theme, because we had Kelsey and Miley. So we really leave it up to them. They have fun with it.
So what do you do if some of these pups are misbehaving?
We send them to detention. It becomes a little bit of a challenge, because we have to move the seals from their pools into other areas when, for example, we need to drain the pools and clean them. So some of them just put up a big stink about that, and they don't want to be moved around, which is why we rely so heavily on our volunteer force. So they're in those pens with boards in between themselves and the seals to move them around. And the seals are pretty smart. They can figure out how to kind of scoot around and come in, try to nip you from behind. Now, our people don't let that happen, but the seals will definitely try to take advantage of that.
Are some of these species, like, smarter than others? Are they all pretty much the same?
I think that the California sea lions show a little bit more aptitude than the others. Now, that's not fair for the elephant seal. They're probably very smart. In fact, I love the elephant seals for some other reasons. But they're not as mobile. You know, they're much larger. They don't scoot along in the sand or in our pens as easily.
Tell me about the people that help make this run so smoothly.
Well, what makes this center run so smoothly, first of all, is our employees. But we're not a big employer. We have 30 people all in, of which I would say there's a little bit of a seasonality to it, but about half of them are associated with the animal care, where we are right now. But what is really our strength is our volunteers. We have over 260 volunteers, and we rely on them, especially in the animal care area, and especially now that we have a full house of patients. They're working very long hours. Our patients eat a lot, and they need a lot of care. So our volunteers start at 7 in the morning, and they're here easily until 7 or 8 at night. And often they go out on the rescues, and we try to rescue as long as there's daylight. So some of our rescues happen at the crack of dawn, and they go until sunset.
Are the rescues primarily on the beach, or are they also in the water?
Primarily on the beach, but not exclusively. So we handle the 52-mile coastline of Orange County, so essentially from Seal Beach to San Onofre. And you can imagine that's mostly coastline, although there's harbors. So a fair number of our rescues will occur in Dana Point Harbor or Newport Beach Harbor as well. And sometimes they're out on those jetties. That gets a little tricky, so we're very careful about that.
Do you give training to the volunteers?
Oh, absolutely. We don't ask a volunteer to go out on a rescue. In fact, we don't ask a volunteer to do much of anything unless they start with the very basics. Start with feeding fish, understanding, you know, what type of fish are being fed and the doses and so forth, and adding to that what medicine, and then it goes on from there. They don't get out onto a rescue until they have had a fair amount of time moving animals within the pens, because these animals can be unpredictable.
What are some of the health issues that you're seeing right now?
Right now, the most prominent health issue is malnutrition and dehydration. And you would think dehydration doesn't make sense because they live in the ocean, but the only way they get their hydration is from fish. So if they're not eating, they're also dehydrated. But I also want to add that one of the sad and interesting things that we are seeing as a result of us changing our protocol, we x-ray every patient, irrespective of what we think their issue may be. And what we have now is enough statistics to show that upwards of 30% of our patients have been shot. Now, that may not be why they're here, because many of them have good insulation. They have some, you know, flubber. But nevertheless, they have been shot.
So shot with what kind of...
It looks like mostly shotguns.
Oh, my gosh. Are they crippled? I mean, what's happening?
Some are. Most of them survive it. And as I said, the good thing is it's not the cause of death usually, but it does slow them down. You know, some people just don't like them on their docks or on the back of their boat. I get that, but that's not the way to handle it.
Are the police doing anything about this?
We've asked, and they're looking into it. There's a simple, relatively simple solution, borrowing it from our neighbors up north that had a similar problem in Northern California. They put out, essentially call it a fake dock in the marina. The seals and seals, they don't really want to hang with the people. They want to hang with themselves. So if we had a fake dock, mm-hmm. for example, down at Dana Point, they would just go there, and they would leave the boaters alone.
We're not allowed to shoot cats and dogs. So when are we allowed to shoot sea lions and seals?
We're not allowed to shoot them either. It is a felony, but it's very difficult to catch somebody doing it. You might remember back in 2010, the creek out here along Laguna Canyon Road flooded, and we had literally knee-high mud in our hospital. Mr. Barker heard about that, you know, being a very big lover of animals. Came to our rescue that day with $250,000, and it got us back open. Now, of course, sadly, he's passed away. We're doing a big capital raise for our expansion, and out of the blue, last fall, we got a letter from the attorneys handling his estate that he had included us in his estate for $1 million. The visitor yard is, or will be, when we reopen the Bob Barker visitor yard.
Did you know him personally?
I did not, unfortunately.
Yeah. What a gem of a man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for us, but not just for us. I mean, he loved animals. Mm-hmm. He did a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, to show up that day?
Yeah, that day. I mean, we've got some really great pictures of him with the team here.
That's great.
And he rolled up his sleeves and helped, mm-hmm. besides writing a check.
Yeah. The real deal.
Yeah.
What is something that would surprise people to know about sea lions?
Well, my favorite story about the California sea lions that not everyone knows is their synchronized birthing. They are, with few exceptions, all born on June 15th, which kind of explains why we get a big influx of patients now, because it's about 6 months since birth, and it's that point in time when they're starting to separate from mom. But imagine synchronized birthing in the middle of June.
How in the world do all of you handle synchronized birthing on June 15th? Like, how many staff members do you have at that point?
Well, actually, it we don't have to worry too much at June. It's 6 months later, sort of now, when the pups are getting separated from mom.
Yeah.
Or mom saying, you're on your own, kid.
Yeah.
You know, now's the time we really need to staff up, which we do. And that's when we have so many more volunteers this time of year.
How soon after that they are born do they start moving around? Like, I imagine, like, a toddler is, like, 6 months later, the sea lions are probably very active. But how soon after are they just all over the place?
Oh, they're all over the place almost immediately. But they don't venture too far from mom. But it kind of depends on the species. So as I mentioned, this California sea lion's mom and pup stay together for about 6 months, and they're pretty close because mom's helping the babe, you know, learn to fend for itself and to feed. You move into an elephant seal, and that separation between mom and pup is only about a month. So the elephant seals really need to learn to fend for themselves much faster.
What's an interesting fact about elephant seals?
Oh, elephant seals, they're my favorite. As you can hear them in the background, we happen to call this Ellipalooza time around here. But my favorite fact about elephant seals, especially since I love to scuba dive and I wish I could dive as well as they can hold their breath for 2 hours.
What?
Yep. And they spiral. They kind of put themselves almost in a trance. And imagine like a corkscrew spiral. They float down towards the bottom of the ocean. They hit the bottom. They wake up. Time to feed.
How did you learn all this? Just on the job? Or did you have a background in knowing a lot about this?
I had a pedestrian sort of background, to be honest with you, from scuba diving. But that gave me a reasonable view into the ocean world out there. But no. Most everything I know now is from the medical team here.
This is kind of a silly question. Do you ever feel jealous? Like you wish you could go down in the ocean and just hold your breath for a few hours?
Oh, I love to dive. And the worst part of diving is coming back up on the boat. Yeah. I wish one of these days I'm going to get a rebreather so I can stay down longer. Because yeah. It's just a fascinating world. And it's not our world. It's their world.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yep.
Hi, my name is Dr. Alyssa Deming, and I am Vice President of Conservation, Medicine, and Science at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center in Laguna Beach, California.
How great is your job?
I think I have one of the coolest jobs around. I've always been intrigued by marine animals, fish, sea turtles, and marine mammals since I was a kid. And having the opportunity to help make sick and injured marine mammals feel better and also do research to help contribute making the ocean a healthier place both for the animals that live in it and for us is about the coolest thing I think I could do with my life. I love what I do.
How long have you been here?
I've been at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center for 4 years in May. I actually started during COVID, so it's been interesting to see the evolution when we were pretty shut down to kind of opening back up. And it's been a great 4 years. We've seen a lot of growth, and we've gone from our barn in the canyon to a field hospital that we're at currently right now because we're renovating that, and then we'll be back over in the barn. So seeing that process over the past few years has been great.
So here we were in the pandemic. People are isolating, and they're near home, and you come out here. What was that like?
For me, I really enjoyed the fact that I still kind of had to go to work. It's hard to be a veterinarian remotely, certainly, and needing to still continue to help the sick and injured marine mammals that show up on our beaches was our highest priority outside of making sure people were safe, and human safety is obviously a concern. But it was nice to continue to have my routine. Being able to come into work, take care of animals, make animals feel better, get them back out into the wild is always kind of my short-term gratification. So not having to compromise on that when all the other craziness was happening throughout the world was a really good mental health balance for me.
Now, you said you have a lot of volunteers. Do you have a lot of high school and college students? And if you do you see kind of a metamorphosis in them? Like if they start out shy and they evolve, like what is the experience for them?
I think most of our volunteers run the gamut. It's so interesting to see the kind of people that are drawn to come here and help, and we certainly could not do the work that we do without their help. A lot of them are college students, and it's great to get them in the door early on in their college career because sometimes you think you want to do something, but then when you actually get, you know, boots on the ground and actually do it, you realize that maybe that wasn't exactly what you expected. So we really like giving students the opportunity to see what it's like to have to take care of animals and the, you know, mental challenges associated with seeing sick animals, and sometimes they don't make it, and so that does cause a little compassion fatigue sometimes, and it's better that they learn those things early on so they can find the right fit for them. Some people deal with it great, and other people realize it's not for them and they can find other roles that they can serve. So a lot of the college students kind of run through and get some experience, and then we see them off into graduate school. Some of them go to veterinary school. Others get jobs straight out of here within the field. And that's kind of how we seed the ripple effect of trying to build an army of ocean conservationists, is getting people in here, getting them hands-on experience, and then getting them back out the door so they can go help other facilities and other places with the skills they learned here.
I would imagine you might get a student that might say, I'm going to law school. And then after coming here, they decide, no, I want to do this, more meaningful.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways, honestly. I think, and the truth is what I try and inspire students to do is find something you're good at and you're passionate about, and you can figure out a way to apply it to ocean conservation or taking care of wildlife. We have a range of jobs here. Not everyone's a veterinarian that works here. We have animal care specialists. We have people that manage our social media and PR. We tap into people that are engineers to help build unique shaped things for our unique shaped patients. So I think the key is to find an area that you have a skill set in, and then figure out how you can apply that skill set to other areas that you're interested in. And so for me, that was marine mammals and becoming a veterinarian. But for other people, that can be social media and helping manage development or donors or running the organization. There's a lot to be said for CPAs and accountants and CEOs, and we couldn't do it without people that have those skill sets. So there's a spot for everybody. And I think when you come here and you volunteer and get some exposure on what the day-to-day is like, that really gives you a proof of what the job will be, and that helps you give a better roadmap to figure out the path you should take to be able to contribute as much as you can.
Great advice. What are some health challenges maybe you've seen over the past year with, you know, what you do, and does it depend on the breed?
It does depend on the species of animal we see, and kind of also the age class, so how old the animal is. Just like people, little kids get colds and get sick when they're young and developing their immune system. So in the little ones, we see a lot of malnutrition with secondary infections like pneumonia or some GI upset. And then as they get older, just like people, they can develop a variety of diseases based on infectious diseases they're exposed to in the environment, or they can develop things like cancer. So a lot of people don't realize that sea lions off the Southern California coast have the highest rate of cancer of any wildlife species. And that's directly associated with a contaminant that's out in our environment called DDT. So a lot of our patients, like about 1 in 4 of the adult sea lions that come through here, have cancer. And so that's something that people don't really realize. And it is quite sad, because oftentimes by the time they beach cast themselves, they're at the point where treatment isn't an option and they're in end stage disease. So for me as a veterinarian, I like to fix things, and sometimes we can't win that battle. But when we do have to allow an animal to pass humanely with euthanasia, having the opportunity to take that animal and to continue to understand the impacts that the environment had on its life or that people had on it, to help allow that animal's messages continue in its death, and then help support ways that we can improve the environment so future generations of sea lions or elephant seals or whales aren't faced with those same challenges, for me is really what the long-term gratification is about. I love the day-to-day rehab and getting them healthy and out the door in the short term, but when we return them to an ocean that still has all of the problems, it can be, for me, a little daunting. And so being able to have research to do things like study the cancer that we see or understand better the impacts of climate change that's having on prey availability or boat strikes in whales or entanglements in fishing gears, being proactive and trying to solve those problems is a great way, for me at least, to feel like we're doing something bigger picture-wise to help make the world a better place for the animals and for us.
It must break your heart when you hear people say, there's no climate change, there's no... I mean, we have things that happen with boats where there's, you know, oil leaks. And I mean, how do we clean this up? Do you see a solution?
Well, for me, I look at it in two different ways. The first one is nature's hard. So just the natural cadence of changing environments happens in a background level, and animals have to figure out how to evade predators and find food and find a mate and raise a baby. Those are things that are a little challenging for us to make an impact on, because that's just nature and kind of struggles of life. When you look at the things that people are doing to their environment, those are the really actionable things that we can change and really help decrease the negative impacts we have in our environment. So when you talk about fisheries entanglements and gunshots and cancer from contaminants, those are actual problems that we can fix. So that's why I like to direct the question more towards what are the problems we're seeing in our patients and which ones are the low-hanging fruit that we can fix. We're not doing our best in so many areas, so if we can just figure out how to elevate to being better stewards of the environment, then and get rid of those problems like increased boat strikes and fisheries entanglements, then they'll have a better chance to help overcome the larger environmental changes associated with a rapidly changing environment. And giving them the space and opportunity to evolve and adapt with the rapidly changing environment, finding new ways to forage for food if their typical predator or prey is not around. Typically, when climate has been a little bit more stable and things transition a little slower, animals have the time to develop different techniques to survive in a changing environment. It really is the quickness of the change that's happening, where we see these like booms and busts of like droughts for 4 years and then floods for 4 years. It's really hard for animals to adapt in the short term of rapidly changing environments like that. So we're seeing impacts on the gray whale population associated with melting sea ice. That's a hard problem to fix, but it's a problem that isn't necessarily directly nature driven. So doing things on your everyday life of being a conscious consumer and figuring out ways you can decrease your carbon footprint, it's just those little decisions every day. If everybody just improves slightly, the gray whales might have a little more sea ice in the future, or at minimum have a little bit of time to adapt other strategies to survive in the changing environment. So although I think climate change, we're already on that path of seeing rapid environmental change, there are ways we can pump the brakes a little bit to give animals the opportunity to learn how to survive in the changing environment.
When you bring kids in, do you start teaching them at a young age about things they could do as adults?
Definitely, and actually kids are some of our best ambassadors. You want to talk about no filters? We have nothing against educating children and letting them go out into the world and giving adults reality checks. Adults can get complacent or just used to their routines, where kids are still developing those routines. And it, you know, now that I'm getting a little bit older, I realize generations actually do come up pretty quickly. So if you make an impact in that 5 to 15-year-old generation, those are going to be the people that make changes and priorities in the next future 30 years. And those kids also put pressure on their parents and their classmates and their acquaintances about the things that they learn here. So if we educate one 10-year-old kid and that kid goes home and talks about decreasing plastic use, shopping at farmers markets, buying local, maybe walking to the store instead of driving, the parents will be more receptive potentially with that coming from their child than that coming directly from us. So the kids are actually some of our greatest ambassadors, and they honestly ask the most honest and best questions. So I always love to have the opportunity to bring kids in here and kind of show them. And you do have to balance, because there is a lot of sadness. Like, you don't want compassion fatigue and you don't want learned helplessness. So always trying to kind of give people that silver lining of there's hope and there's stuff you can do. I definitely tell people if we were doing our best, I wouldn't have any hope. But we're not trying our best yet, so there's a lot of room for an improvement. And I think kids are really open-minded to trying to figure out solutions as opposed to excuses to why things are done a certain way.
Well, Gen Z is very outspoken on things like the environment and societal issues and activism, mental health, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm seeing kind of, I would say, a shift across the board with some of the questions that the students are asking when they're coming through in our programs, and they're more focused to asking questions associated with solution-based approaches. So instead of saying, why is it like this, or what's wrong with that animal, they're saying, what can you do to help, or what can I do to help? And I think it's that approach in the Gen Z that will really make a quick difference. And I would definitely encourage people to ask questions and to be open-minded, inclusive, and have the hope in knowing that their day-to-day actions and the message that they spread can actually elicit change and cause a ripple effect throughout the entire local community and also beyond.
Amazing. So is it always like a 24-hour rock concert here, or are they ever quiet?
No, there are times that they're quiet during the day when people are here. They see the action, and they know that the fish people are here, and so they're interested in food, and this is when they get their exercise and a little physical therapy in. But at night, They definitely do tuck up and take great naps, and usually it's pretty quiet once the sun goes down out here with just the occasional vocalization coming from one of the alleys. Their elephant seals actually snore a lot, and they sneeze a lot, too. The noises that come out of those animals are hilarious, not just their vocalizations, but, yes, their snores for sure.
I guess stay tuned for the webcam.
Yeah, absolutely.